Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting the NFL playoffs, buckle up. Betting football's hard enough as it is. We're doing the research for you, so listen to Cash the Ticket with Mike Valeni and I. We'll be dropping new episodes for every single playoff game. And that's going to be storylines leading into it, so some good football stuff, but also the betting nuggets you're looking for. Sides, totals, trends, player props, throw those in there too. Pre-game and post-game, we're going to be all over the postseason. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to KCBS In-Depth.
Really, in order to find quality care, you often have to be on a wait list that's months long.
The people, places, and issues the Bay Area is talking about.
The aggressive advocates who were looking to overrule Roe for so long, they really had no idea of the consequences they might be opening up.
In this case, there very well may be charges that are appropriate. For example, trying to obstruct an official proceeding of Congress, right? That is unlawful.
This is KCBS In-Depth.
Artificial intelligence, or AI, is turning up everywhere, and somehow it's finding its way into everything we own and use on a daily basis. But what is it, and why are so many people worried it's going to take over? Ben Beharin, CEO of Creative Strategies, is someone that can answer both of those questions, and perhaps make us feel a little better about our deepest science fiction fears. But best of all, he has a refreshingly positive perspective on the technology. Ben Beharin is our guest on this week's In Depth. Here's our conversation. So, Ben, I think a great place to start is let's define AI. And I say that because the term is thrown around a lot recently. And I suspect sometimes it's accurate, and I suspect sometimes it's not really AI. So perhaps we could get a working definition.
Oh, sure. No, it's a great place to start. And, you know, it kind of feels like one of those philosophical discussions, right, to start. Because you're right, there's a lot of ways to look at this. I think people who have been in this field for a long time look at some of the generative AI stuff that we have today, which is really just, I would say, some form of advanced, to use a technical term, matrix multiplication, which just means that if you put in a word, it's essentially going to try to predict the next word or just string together logic of sentence structure and a whole host of other things, right? And that's just simple like math that's happening on our compute engines. Nobody would call that intelligence, right? Being able to say, write me an essay on so-and-so and so, you know, topic, and it just goes to the internet and forms something that looks readable. You know, again, it's automating a process. It's not really what we would sort of call intelligent. So I think there's a gap today as to what this idea is of where we'll go, where something might be truly intelligent, you know, maybe even able to do or come up with ideas, concepts, creative ideas that humans can't, or on the level with humans. That is not where we're at today. But I think the way I would look at least today is that it's more of an augmentation type of intelligence. So you're able to have it help you do things, help you, you know, write an email for you, right, in your tone. Again, not intelligent, that's a useful feature, but that's essentially augmenting a function of a task that a human does with a computer. And that's, there. We can go down this path of, well, is that the ultimate reality here, that it's more just an augmented type of intelligence designed to make humans more efficient? Or are we going down this path where something's going to be independently sentient, where you hear people talk about this idea of, you know, artificial general intelligence? So I don't know. I know a lot of people are chasing this, you know, sentient. I think that's a long, 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 long way off. But the idea that this is now just augmenting us in helpful, quasi-useful ways, right? That's the world that we're at today with this, you know, quote-unquote term, artificial intelligence.
With that as our working definition, what you've described and omitting the sentient side, that seems to have been around for maybe a lot longer than the general public might realize. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think what's happened is we were always compute, constrained, right? There's been natural language engines that essentially, you know, you could kind of talk to a robot that could get information, right? You've seen some of this stuff with call centers, but they were very limited. And I think people very easily knew that this was a robot, right? This was a bot. But that was a compute constrained, very specific type of use case. You know, people will say, look at Alexa, you know, Amazon's Alexa, look at what Google had with their Hey Google, even Apple with Siri. You could kind of see shades of it, but there wasn't this breakthrough in transformers and deep learning that kind of opened up this ability to do, which is really just predictive stringing of text, so matrix multiplication, in a way that's one fast, meaning that you could type a query and today it can respond to you and give you, you know, 1,000 words in just a couple of seconds, right? That would have not been possible, minus some of these breakthroughs. But the fundamental technology to get us to where we are, yes, has been around for a while, and you've seen shades of natural language processing. It's just that we had some compute breakthroughs in algorithms, as well as more compute, thanks to NVIDIA, right, in the cloud, to make these models, which make them feel much more conversational today than they really ever have.
This is that lifelike quality, I think, that you're speaking of. And I think about, for instance, video games, the technology of video games. In some ways, let's say video games 15 years ago were perhaps using similar style technology. Is that a right way of thinking about it?
Yeah, but again, just compute bound, meaning that they could only go so far, right? They were somewhat interactive, but there was a limit to call it what it could learn, right? So obviously, if you do with ChatGPT or Perplexity, you know, Google's Gemini, if you use any of these things, they've got a much larger data set that they can pull from to essentially converse with you. And I'm using a fairly simplistic term, right? But the idea that it could take that data, orchestrate it in a way that you can read, and then now you have a back and forth. They're just working with a much larger data set, thanks to a lot of these fundamental breakthroughs in compute and the math that goes along with that. So yeah, that fundamental concept was there, but it's now been 100x'd in its capabilities because of these sort of breakthroughs that's happened in the last, you know, 10 years.
What role did the internet, and I'm thinking the amount of information that's available on the internet, what role did that play in this breakthrough?
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of the data itself, that was a pivotal part, right? Because you look at these models and they're essentially trained on the breadth and depth of the internet, which essentially means that if it's on the internet, it can generate an answer for you or a conversation based on a topic. So it's using that knowledge base. I think that's a fundamental piece of this. But again, to your point, right, the internet's been around for a really long time. It's not that that data wasn't there. It's just that we didn't have the compute. We didn't have the underlying algorithms and fundamental architectures to take the breadth and depth of the internet, like, you know, to use the pool of the worlds of information that exists online. And now you be able to have a query, a back and forth with an agent to learn about that, to discuss about that, to search about these things. So that's, you know, the fundamental knowledge base is essentially what exists digitally online. Our ability to query and index that is the fundamental breakthrough that generative AI has changed. That impacts search, it impacts a whole host of the ways we use these things. But that knowledge base is the fundamental reason why we can have these what feel like, you know, conversational formats with these technologies.
What's ringing in my mind right now is this is almost Silicon Valley's legacy, in a strange sort of way. A few generations ago, these things were developed to sort of pave the way. It's almost part of the Silicon Valley family tree. And I think it speaks to the type of innovation that has happened for many, many years in the area. I'm curious what you think of that.
I mean, yes. I mean, I just, yeah, I don't think we'd sort of, I think we could hone that more to just technology than I would just, I like, you know, we like to isolate that to what goes on in the Valley. And yes, there is a ton of AI startups. You know, Google's played a real big part of this, who's based in the Valley. So I think there's a fundamental cornerstone of that process, which is really just chasing technology, right? Chasing compute, chasing capabilities. What gives humans kind of the best, you know, the best technology at their fingertips? To quote Steve Jobs, sort of just use his idea, right? The computers are bicycles for the mind. If you just carry everything that he said there about just this idea of having this type of power at your fingertips, and then we layer the internet, and now we layer a much more natural way to basically sift through data. Yeah, I think a lot of that hones in on what the Valley has strove for with innovation. But it's a much broader technology story that might emanate from the Valley culture. But this is really a transformative moment that's going to impact technology, government, societies, countries, communities at fairly fundamental levels when we look back on this 10, 15 years from now.
And you touched on something that I find interesting too, is the way in which it is global now. For a while, their innovation was certainly isolated to a small group of places, one of which was Silicon Valley. I was reading a paper yesterday by a woman who does a lot of work in music generation with AI, and she's based out of France. That this is a global phenomenon now. People across the globe are working with the same tools now and the same creativity.
Yeah, and I would say there's another layer to this where I think a generative AI or everything that we're talking about here actually makes technology more accessible to people who, you know, maybe never used the full breadth and depth of the technical capabilities that a computer or a phone or any of these things give them. So I think there's a real interesting story about or narrative here just about that idea that, you know, again, I think a good example of this is, right, like you said, music creation, even video creation, video editing. You know, there's a lot of people who just don't do that because it's really hard to use the tools that are out there. But if you could just type into a query box, you know, help me edit this image, make the colors brighter, blur out the background, like that's stuff that would take a designer, used to take a graphic designer hours. And if a normal person can do that with just a text prompt, you know what I mean? Like you're letting more people do more with these tools where there might've been higher barriers to entry because of user interface. And I think, you know, another great example, you're seeing this today play out in real time. This is really only a phenomenon of the last, you know, maybe 6 to 8 months where we actually have these agents, these AI systems that can go and generate code. So you have people writing software who never wrote software before and making very good online software apps, etc. Right. And that prior to that, you had to know how to code. And now you just sort of need to know some basic frameworks and what to type into a generative AI prompt. And so I think that's what I mean about this idea that people who could never do these things before because of that skill barrier was so high can now start to enter that field. Again, they may not be as good as a professional musician or a professional videographer, but you see what I mean? There's a way that someone can start going down that path with much less barrier to entry. And I think that's interesting from just letting this be more accessible for more people.
Sort of the other side of that coin, and I ask this as someone who's based in the Bay Area, I'm proud of the innovation that sits just south of me. It's always been, for all of my lifetime, the place where computing and just that's where the geniuses go. I remember my father telling me that. Silicon Valley, that's where the geniuses go. And have we in some ways created the thing that's going to take away our unique area?
I mean, I think that's a great part of this debate. You know, it was interesting. I saw a study come out from a range of physicians who do research or do like research that's part of kind of the broader medical community. And they actually found that while I'm going to blank on the stats, but there was a high percentage of them that found generative AI was useful in their field. They also almost unanimously said it sometimes takes the joy out of some of that work. And so I think you could kind of see, and you see, you know, people in music, people in Hollywood saying, you know, this is never going to replace humans. And there's a good possibility, right? I think you could argue that creativity, which is born out of human experience, like suffering, felt emotion, lends itself to something. And I'm speaking particularly to the creative arts, for example. I don't know if the same idea applies to coding, because there are people who love coding, but I don't know if it's like the vast majority of people who just want to sit there and write millions of lines of code. So if you can automate some of that, that's a net plus. But I think there are areas where there's still part of that humanity that's going to have to play a part of this. I don't think that's at this point in time. I don't foresee a horizon where it replaces that. Again, maybe someday. I think there's people out there who believe that. But I do think there's something to the human experience, the human contribution to work, that is going to be really hard to displace. You know, and that's why I keep coming back to what I started off with, which is that right now, if you look at the most successful areas where generative AI is producing a return on an investment, and in particularly in enterprise environments, it's in automating things that are mundane, things that people don't love doing. It's not actually replacing the things that they love spending time on, even if that's creative arts, because they still enjoy that. They might use it to help, but they're not just going, write me a song, right? Or make me a movie. There's still an inherent process in that where somebody with those skills is curating, editing, and a deeper part of that process than just fully automating it away.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I focused on AI in art specifically, and even more specific, my focus was, I did a story about musicians using artificial intelligence. And one of the, I spoke to a vast majority of musicians, but also fine artists, graphic designers, so on. And one of the things that just was across the board consistent was, they said that it's AI was wonderful because it took away the tedium, all those tasks, whatever it was, it just took those out in many respects. But there was never going to be, in their mind, a way to replace, we'll call it a divine spark, a humanistic spark, the soul of the human, and one person told me. But it was consistent among those who create artistic things. And I think that might be true for really all things, whether it's art or whether it's a program, coding, so on. There's still a part of, whether it's collaboration or just a darn smart person, that happens in the human mind.
Go ahead. No, I was gonna say, I totally agree with that point. And that's why, you know, my view is, right now, there really isn't a horizon where I think we do replace what you just said, but I know there's people who are like, oh, sure, it's inevitable. We'll get there someday. But I don't think there's any consensus on that. It'll be a debate that we follow over the next, you know, decade plus.
Lastly, in looking to the future, a lot of people I've spoken with see two paths, as they describe it. This incredible technical innovation that creates computing that we could never even imagine. And then the other path, and these are not mutually exclusive. These are paths that a lot of people believe AI will travel both of them simultaneously. This will also become a really good marketing tool for pretty much everything in our lives. I'm curious where you see it going.
Yeah, I mean, again, right, it comes down to what are going to be the fundamental use cases that that people use these things for. And I think every industry category, right, from medical to coding to industry to teaching, there's going to be a facet of this that's helpful. I think you look at the external opportunity in this case, like you said, right, from just some marketing standpoints, and sure, you're seeing an augmentation in the creative marketing areas to come up with concepts, to just brainstorm ideas, kind of get just the thought process going, right? The idea process going. But I think it's going to fundamentally impact so many different parts of work processes. We're just starting to scratch, you know, the very beginning of this from a surface level. But there are a couple of areas where you're just seeing people have success day one. And that's that category, certainly one of them.
I know I said last, but I do have one last. I'm curious, you know a lot about not just AI, but technology in general. I'm curious, this probably doesn't happen very often. Has there been a moment recently where AI has done something that has made you say, wow, that's so cool? And specifically, maybe it's something in your daily life where you all of a sudden realize, like, oh my goodness, I can't believe technology can do that. Is there an example that comes to mind?
Yeah, for us, honestly, it's been this ability to do coding and create software. You know, my company, you know, we use a lot of third-party software, but we've actually found that for some of our internal processes, whether that's part of our research flow, part of our data collection flow, we've actually been experimenting with just writing our own internal software. And it's things that I just, you know, we're like, hey, it'd be great if we could do this, but I'm never going to pay, right, $50,000 to $100,000 for somebody to go write me custom software. Like, we can actually do in days now with just generative AI. And that to me is mind blowing because, you know, like I said, we're not coders. We don't employ coders, but the tools are starting to exist now that just get you to do a prompt, you slightly edit it, and it will get to your end result with software for everything from Mac apps to iOS apps to cloud to software to service apps. It's pretty impressive. So that to me, and like I said, this is new. This is, you know, within the last, you know, 6 to 8-ish months where we've just sort of seen this, you don't need to know how to code to write software. And I believe that's a very, very disruptive idea to a lot of public companies, businesses, and even just the idea that large enterprises will just start writing with their own software instead of buying it from others is such a big and disruptive idea. But that's in the most recent, that's been one of the most mind-blowing things to see happen because it's just incredible to be able to, within a day, come up with your own software.
Right. It's like, you know, I think of, you know, a construction model, a house builder who, instead of having to go get something custom made, they could just simply make their own, let's say, pipe fittings on their own to fit the project they're working on, whatever that is. And it really is, it opens so many other possibilities. And I think you touched on it. This is all fast. Everything goes so fast.
Very, very fast. And just, you know, continue moving. Let, you know, you look at this moment that was ChatGPT of a couple of years ago, and we're in such a different place now, and we'll be in such a different place in another year. So it's incredible the amount of innovation that's happening. Honestly, it's exciting. I know it freaks a lot of people out, but, you know, this is one of those very big and disruptive moments, like I said, that we'll look back on in 10 years and see profound impacts from.
Yeah, it's, I think you touched on the word is disruptive, and that's not a bad thing. I remember the Atari 2600 wasn't disruptive, but the fact that I could do it at my house was disruptive.
Yes, right.
And the disruptive, depending, there's any innovation involves this element of disrupting things, of just fundamentally changing the way we look at reality. And it's an amazing thing. I went into this story feeling scared of AI. I walk away from this story feeling excited about it and thinking that a lot of these things that we in the media make out to be potential problems, yeah, they'll be problems, but not to the level that we think they are. The story that we tell, I think, is maybe not that accurate in terms of the way that the harm that could come from this. I'm sure a lot of harm could. However, I think we're going to figure that out as we keep going.
Yep, I agree. And I think it's good that everybody kind of chasing down this path has a philosophy of responsible AI. You know, you hear it talked about, you hear it debated. They're trying to keep accountability, and you even just see, right, some of the big companies putting very specific guardrails on some of these technologies in order to account for that safety. So I think we're not being haphazard about it. You know, like you said, I agree there is a lot of, you know, reasons to just be concerned and make sure it moves responsibly, but 100%, you know, it is going to be one of the most disruptive fundamental piece of technologies we've really ever seen.
Thank you so much for taking time. This was just so much fun to think about again and again. It touches philosophy. It has these brass tacks. I can see it in real time. I'm building something, elements, and it's a really cool experience to live through. So I appreciate you putting it in perspective. Thank you to Ben Beharin for being our guest on In Depth. You can listen to this and all past episodes of In Depth at kcbsradio.com and on the Odyssey app. Thank you for listening. For KCBS and In Depth, I'm David Welch.
Been listening to KCBS In Depth. Get every episode by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Visit kcbsradio.com for more news and interviews. We are the Bay Area's news station, KCBS.
Hey, singing can help you remember things, so here's some tips for parents out there during these tough times.
Number one,
make sure your kids wash their hands for 20 seconds after they've coughed or sneezed or been outside.
Two,
virtual play dates, social and physical distancing can help save lives.
Three,
tell them they're safe and show your love and pride. Yes, we'll get through this together. Find out more at coronavirus.gov. A message from the CDC and the Ad Council.
I never considered myself to be a heavy drinker. At first, I only drank with friends, then to get through the day. I hit rock bottom when I realized I was choosing alcohol over my family. That's when I made the call. With my doctor's help, I was diagnosed with alcohol use disorder. Now, I'm getting to the root of my addiction and finding better ways to cope.
Mental health care works when you make the call. Visit mentalhealthcareworks.org. A message from the American Psychiatric Association Foundation.